Sarah. It's your favourite podcasting intro music once more. Do you like the sound? Is that good?
I can't help it. It just cracks me up every time I hear it.
I would like to open the nominations for all listeners and co-hosts to submit other intro music. Because there's a website where you just like you gotta pay to license stuff. And this was I felt the most us from the 50 others I listened to before this. I'm like, okay, that'll do. Hello, my name's Josh Withers, and the other voice has a name, which is
Sarah Aird.
And this is the Celebrant Talk Show. We're from the Celebrant Institute, and this is a podcast by celebrants for celebrants talking about, guess what? Celebrants.
Celebrants.
Oh, gosh, how good are celebrants?
Sometimes when I'm talking about this show at OPD, because I tell my students that I have a podcast, and I say, Josh and I really just talk shit about being celebrants. You may or may not find it useful.
It's such a sell. Hey guys, let me tell you about a deal I've got for you today. You sign up today.
Somebody said to me in our last session, you need to not say that because it doesn't. You're not selling it very well. it is actually useful.
It's definitely not like come on down to the House of Fun style. You've undersold it.
Just a little bit, I think, maybe. Hi, everyone. Celebrant Talk Show. We are here again. Somehow it's been 2 months since we were here last time. I can't believe how crazy the last 2 months has been. It's been quite epic and a little bit ridiculous, but that's okay. We're finally, you and I, in the same country at our desks at the same time, with an hour to record this show.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
For those of you that look across the back catalogue and kind of you look at the release dates and you look for some kind of pattern.
No.
Or some kind of method. There is no pattern. There is no method. It's basically like when you hear this, so you're listening to this podcast right now, what you're listening to is the culmination of literally 2 months of Sarah and I back and forthing. Are you free Friday? Yeah. Oh, actually, no. What about Monday at 2? Oh, I'm through at 3. Oh, I can't do 3 for 2 months.
And today is the 26th of July, and so we finally managed to make it happen, which is cool. It's funny because, you know, every now and again we do go, let's try and record once a fortnight.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
I don't know.
I'm so impressed by the podcasts that I listen to where they have a regular every 2 weeks or every week release. That impresses me a lot. Although yesterday I was listening to one of my favorite ever podcasts, which is called This Podcast Will Kill You, and it's all about infectious diseases, and it's awesome. It's by two epidemiology, ecology kind of grad students in the US. It's really cool. Anyway, they had an Ask Us Anything episode, and one of the questions was how do you fit this into your life? And they were sometimes we don't. It's very hard. And while they were doing the first season, they were both doing the final year of their PhD, and they both said, our research really suffered first year. So now we've had to get a little bit more creative and a bit more streamlined and efficient and effective, but they make it work. So good on them.
One day. I'm always trying to communicate to, because there's a lot of people in my circles that are in creative industries, whether it's creating podcasts, writing, celebrants, photographers, that kind of thing. I like that kind of world, and so I kind of gravitate to people that are in that world. And the constant conversation is about how I literally wrote a blog post about this on the Celebrant Institute a few days ago, about how it's really impossible to price yourself out per hour. As if you're working at Macca's and you did a 5-hour shift and you earn $20 an hour. It's so hard to do that because this creative work, it operates on so many different levels. It can come all at once and then nothing, but then still you can turn it on. Like if you've got to do a funeral in an hour, you can turn it on. You can make it happen. But then you've also got to be in a place where if you hadn't done anything for a week, and right now you just got to turn it on, do a funeral in an hour. That's a completely different scenario to where you've done two or three funerals this week and you got to turn it on in an hour, as opposed to you've done 30 this week and you got to turn it on in an hour. Those are three completely different scenarios that take away from your energy and your soul in three completely different ways. I don't know if one's better or I don't know. Do you have a preference, like, where you've done nothing or you've done a few or you've done a lot? Like, have you got a better creative place for you?
I'm probably better if I have a bit too much.
Yeah. Well, so because I'm the same.
When I don't have enough to do, I don't do anything. Like, I've got stuff, but I don't have enough to keep me busy, so I end up doing none of it. Whereas when I've got too much or to fit into the day, I know that I have to do it, so I just do it, and that it just kind of happens. But also, like, on the hourly rate thing, because I'm teaching a topic this year at OPD about setting your fees, and there's been some discussion about hourly rates and yada yada. And I think we've even talked about this on the podcast before. There are some funeral celebrants who charge by the hour, and I don't really understand that. First of all, because I don't see how you can give an accurate quote up front if you're charging by the hour. And second of all, I happen to be very efficient at writing. I could write a full funeral ceremony, including a eulogy, in less than 2 hours. And I know that that can take my colleagues 5, 6, 7, 8 more hours. Why should I get paid less just because I'm more efficient than someone who takes longer to write? Like, if we were charging the same hourly rate, so some would argue, oh, well, you would just charge a higher hourly rate, but then some people are going to look at my hourly rate and go, well, how come you're double everyone else? We're not going to hire you. So, yeah, the hourly rate thing is really interesting. And I also think it's a good thing to think about at the beginning of your career. You know, approximately how many hours does it take me to do a wedding, and what do I think I'm worth per hour or whatever it is. And that's a starting point, but I don't think it's a useful point as you continue on, because hopefully you'll get more efficient and more effective at the way you work throughout your career. So you'll be taking less hours to do a wedding and your pay should be going up, not down. So yeah, interesting.
I had a ceremony yesterday afternoon, and it was my first ceremony in 10 days. I had a 10-day break. And so
that must be almost unheard of for you.
Yeah, it was pretty miraculous. It was lovely. And it was like, it's so good to be at home, so good to be home for 10 days straight without any work, and just to chill and relax and spend time with family and like with so many things. Like, you would find it really hard to be in a house right now, because you saw it when had the wall hadn't even come down yet. No, oh gosh, so that place is a bombshell. So there's all this renovation happening, and so there's just a lot of fidgety things, and then there's actual real business things, like there's stuff I've got to mail you. I literally asked for your PO box yesterday and I still haven't actually gone to the postal. So there's just things that have got to happen, but it's just good to kind of stop for a 10 days and just be human.
Yeah.
But it was really hard walking to that ceremony yesterday, because I thought, I have not thought about marriage ceremonies for 10 days straight. And I'm like, I don't know what to do.
Luckily, I'm pretty sure it's just like riding a bike.
Oh, yeah. Like 3 seconds later, I'm like, yeah, I just had to kind of engage my brain. But I was saying to the, because the photographers and I, we carpooled down, and I was saying on the way home that because the week before that, we had five elopements in a row, if I mean, one a day, 5 days in Queenstown, which is my week coming up ahead of me as well, same thing. And that was great. I really enjoyed that, because you just kind of get in this flow state. And like you do a ceremony one day, and then you walk out of that and you start having ideas. And like, cool, well, tomorrow I'll do this. But the fifth one was a great. So like they're all hopefully really good. But the fifth one, I felt like on fire and creative and awesome and excited. And then I just had a couple of days off, and it was kind of a weird stop.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
I need to apologize as well for the variety of noises.
Is that a vacuum cleaner?
It's we're getting concrete polishing done. So to try and paint the picture for everyone, because we bought a house in December, and we bought a beautifully small beach shack kind of house where it had a combo lounge room, dining room, living area, kitchen, entryway, just an all-purpose single thing, which is a little bit too small for, you know, people to exist. So we've added a lounge room, and we thought a cool but easy thing would be to have polished concrete. Very cool, not easy. God.
Really? Yeah. Not easy.
Throw down some lino.
Don't they just, like, come in with a machine and just, like, do it?
Yeah, for, like, 5 days straight with all these different machines. Oh. And so that's him polishing, but it's not even the final polish. I don't know what's happening, Sarah.
Not
it's
just one machine. Like, multiple loud, machines. And it's, wow.
There's dust everywhere and...
I'm fascinated. Yeah. You know, okay.
I come in every day. I'm like, oh, you're zhuzhing the thing again, are you? Like, you're doing more zhuzhing.
It's people good. Even know what zhuzhing means anymore?
Why, well, actually.
Do the new Queer Eye boys use zhuzhing? I haven't watched the new Queer Eye.
I believe they do zhuzh, but can I throw you a complete sidewinder question?
Sure.
How do you spell zhuzh?
With a Z.
Z, and then what's the second letter?
Either an H or a J, depending on...
I'm of the J class. Z, J,
yeah, Z, J, U, no, U.
U.
S-H.
Look at you.
Or maybe a Z-H. Z. Maybe a...
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a U. I'm definitely a U, not a double O.
I feel it's a double O word. It's a Z, Z, J, double O, Z, J, H maybe.
Yeah, it's a tricky one.
It is. I'm glad we're broaching these topics. No one else is talking about this.
The big issues in the world of celebrancy, how to spell the word zhuzhing. Well, I mean, that could be important for people who write scripts. They might need to write down the word zhuzhing one day in a script.
They might. They're like, because I'm assuming the Queer Eye boys, I'm assuming they're not reading a script. I'm assuming it's part of their vernacular.
Yeah. Well, it was Carson, wasn't it?
Yeah,
the first time, and it was his word. Oh, well, okay. I've just put it into Google, and Google comes up with ZJOOSH.
Okay, I was in far. I was 90%
actually,
there.
That's a shop. It's a shop, so maybe that's not actually about the word. Okay, let's move on from this because that's not at all relevant.
All right, Sarah. I've got a really important question for you. Have you paid your invoice?
Yes, I have. And I even got a receipt from MLCS, so I know that I paid the right amount and that they have received it.
So just on the off chance that no one knows what this sentence is about, Sarah, why would I be asking you if you've paid your invoice?
So every year, celebrants, Commonwealth Registered Marriage celebrants, have to pay an annual registration fee to the Commonwealth Government. It is currently $240 a year. No GST is applied because it's a cost recovery, not for a service. And the invoices usually come out in the first week of July, but this year they didn't come out until the 18th, which was quite late. That was like last Thursday. And we have 60 days to pay the invoice. So it's not like they give us a week. We have 60 days to pay it. But if you do not pay the invoice, you are automatically deregistered. There are no appeals at all, no special circumstances, no none of that. You are automatically deregistered. And last year, 351 celebrants were deregistered for not paying their fee. So it's a big deal. And I, at this time of year, I talk about it quite a lot, especially at OPD, but we did talk about it on the podcast last year as well. Pay your freaking fee. I can't stress this enough. And also, as I posted on the Celebrant Institute page last week and on my own Facebook page, if you haven't received your invoice, it means that something has gone wrong. It doesn't mean that someone in the MLC office just went, oh, I don't think Jane Smith needs to pay a fee this year. That's not a thing.
I appreciate the personal call out to Jane as well. Pay your invoice, Jane. Get your shit together.
Hi, Jane Smith, whoever you are. So it means that it might be in your spam folder. A big proportion of the people who got deregistered last year, their invoice was in their email spam folder. I don't understand how you can go 60 days without checking your spam folder, but apparently that's a thing. So check your spam folder, check any other email addresses that you might have. If you haven't received it by now, ring MLCS and find out what's going on, because it means that something has gone terribly wrong, and it does not mean that you don't have to pay it.
So there's two topics that I wanted to come off the back of that with, and we'll get to the second one because that's a little bit more meaty, which is why we pay the thing. Because I always like to just try and reiterate these really foundational things so people understand the relationship that celebrants and MCLS and all that kind of thing have.
MLCS.
The M's and the L's and the C's and the S's, they get them
very
all together.
Confusing.
Luckily, they won't get offended if I get their acronyms mixed up. on a side note, I hope that if everyone listening to this podcast takes one thing away from this episode is I do it daily because that's pretty much the only habit I can form. I can't form like a bi-weekly habit or monthly. I can form a daily habit. I'm all in on daily. Form a daily habit of just checking your spam for, just click it. Just click on the spam, see what's in there. So much of the time, there's nothing there. So much of the time, it's just full of dodgy guys wanting to sell dodgy things, doing dodgy products. But gosh, you know what? I can tell you probably once every 3 to 4 days, there's an inquiry in there. It's just...
Yep.
I don't know why I went in there, but I feel
just
like...
Just because it did.
The algorithm's like, hey, this guy's never emailed you before. I reckon he's dodge. And...
Yep.
That's... Yeah, that's what happens. So just check your spam. I reckon people are losing cash because of the spam folder.
Totally. I use G Suite to manage my email. And in G Suite, you can go into the settings and you can say, hide this folder unless it has something in it. So my spam folder doesn't appear in my list of email folders unless it has something in it, in which case it appears and it goes bold. So as soon as it appears and it goes bold, that's my trigger to look at it. I don't need to go, I'm going to look at it at 2 o'clock every day. I just look at it when it turns up and it's bold, and it's very handy because often it's an inquiry, or sometimes it's even a response to an email that I've sent, which just blows my mind. I don't understand. So just check your spam.
And on that note, because I wonder whether there are Celebrant Institute members that don't get our regular emails and they might be in your spam folder, in which case what happens is if you click on that email and you say, hey, I don't want emails like this to go into my spam folder, there's, depending on whichever email client you're using, there'll be a not junk or not spam or mark as good or mark as, there'll be a positive button somewhere that you can say, hey, this kind of thing, don't put it in spam. And particularly, if it's the Celebrant Institute emails, you can add our email address as a contact in your email app, which is usually an indication that it's a good email. So there might also be a function called whitelisting. So whitelisting and blacklisting, if you're not familiar with that, if you wanted to whitelist Josh Withers, you say, hey, anything Josh does, I'm in on it. Or if you blacklisted me, it's like the opposite of that. Kind of like, you know, my mother, if you did that, just blacklist me. I don't want to hear about it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
So get into that.
Yeah, do that.
But
totally.
just a quick primer. I like this. People that might not have been listening for a long time, people, maybe there's new celebrants, just people that should maybe know why we pay the couple of hundred a year to the M Marriage Law Celebrant, MLCS.
I did actually write about this on the Celebrant Institute. So if you are a member, there is an article in the last few weeks about why and what it is for. Basically, the government made a decision a few years ago that in as many areas as possible, they would put the cost of running a program back onto the users of that program rather than having general taxpayers foot the bill. So the general taxpayers don't get any benefit out of the costs of running the celebrant program. We get the benefit because we're the celebrants and that's how we make our living. So, and I suppose the general public gets the benefit of there being celebrants available to marry them, but that's not really the point. So in 2014, they amended the Marriage Act to say that there would be a cost recovery scheme, which means that the users of the program, which is the celebrants, would pay the costs of that program. And a lot of those costs are for new applications. So they charge aspiring celebrants $600 to apply to be a celebrant. And then there, of course, are ongoing costs of managing the program, which is to do with current celebrants. So they charge us $240 a year. every year they are required to publish on their website a statement about how they've used those funds. I think it's like 80%, it goes to salary, and then there's like 10% to managing the like the online stuff, the register and the marriage celebrant portal and stuff, and then 10% to various other things, little bits and pieces. But that statement is online, and anyone can download it and read it. It's a bit dry, but you might be interested. None of the money goes to births, deaths, and marriages in any state because that's not what it's for. None of the money goes towards a cost for us to register the marriage or towards the online registration systems of registering the marriage or anything like that. It's completely separate. These are separate organisations. The Commonwealth government is who we pay our fee to, and the state government manages registering marriages. So that's why we pay it. Interestingly enough, the AFCC conference was at the start of this week, and the Registrar of Marriage Celebrants spoke. And of course, I have spies everywhere. And someone rang to tell me that she admitted that they have raised too much money this year. So that doesn't mean we're getting a refund. I can assure you of that.
We're going to get certificates. I want to get more certificates.
No, we're not getting certificates. Basically, they think that they've had more applications to become a celebrant than they had budgeted for. So they've made more money from aspiring celebrants than they had expected to, which means that they may drop the $600 cost in future, but it's not going to go away. It might like go to $570 or something, but there's no actual news on that. It's just, oh yeah, we've just discovered this. We'll have to think about what we're going to do about it.
I'm racing through my mind with ideas on what the MCS could spend the extra money on.
They don't want to spend the extra money.
I know, exactly.
No, so, it's cost recovery. It's not about getting money to spend.
So a couple of years ago, I think maybe when the program first started, you got a certificate every year.
Yeah. We only got it once. It was the first year that we paid.
And then obviously they figured that cost a lot of money. None of us cared about it. But you know what they could do? Give me a little bit of a Facebook badge, just an MLCS Facebook badge. Hey, Josh is legit. He's in. He's good.
Can you imagine? Don't even. Yeah.
Like even the physical badges that we can wear. I can have like a kind of like when you're in Scouts.
You can get an
AFCC badge.
You can have a patch.
MLCS badge.
You could get a patch every year, like paid my fee, and like all down your arm, you'd have all the patches of all the years that you'd paid.
And like, because
you know, when you were in Guides and Scouts as a child, that was the thing, to get them all down your arm, not just to have like one at the top.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I still have my guide blanket with my badges on it, because I'm a nerd. It's like, I know that some people are really annoyed about the fee. I'm not annoyed. I think it's fine. I know that some people are really annoyed that automatic deregistration is the penalty for not paying the fee. If you feel really strongly about it, the only way to get it changed is to lobby your local federal member of parliament and ask them to put forward a bill to change the Marriage Act.
And there are efforts in that place. I've been contacted by one celebrant who's been asking for people like myself to pledge support to their campaign to lobby politicians to have that changed. And I do think it's a bit harsh, but it's also not
my
decision. Yeah, look, I mean,
I know, like, people, the analogy people keep making is, you know, if I don't pay my electricity bill, it doesn't get shut off straight away.
Yeah.
Like, I get the chance to pay it late.
That's the angle that I'm, like... Like, I'm all for the registration fee, I'm for the cost recovery, I'm for deregistration if you don't meet those commitments. But it's just a little bit harsh. I'd just like to see the knife blunted a little bit.
And while I totally get that, we do also have 60 days. Like, we know it's coming and it's not going to be due next week. We have 60 whole days to make the payment. That's a really long time, and it's longer than you get with any other bill. And you know it's coming.
But I don't think it's about length of time or anything like that. I just – things happen, you know. Like, I – for example, I'm not worried, but I wish I could – prepay next year's fee, because next year in July I'm going to be in Europe for the month, and I'll get emails. Like, emails are international, it's fine, but I'm currently setting up things in my life so for the 3 months that I'm in Europe next year, I want to have as little of that stuff. Like,
yeah.
I'm trying to prepay insurances and prepay licenses and things and all that stuff. I'm just trying to have it all done so that I don't want to stress out while I'm there. And
yeah.
And it's fine. I know it'll be fine, but I'm sure I'm not the only anxious person that also calls myself a marriage celebrant. And
yes, it's very true.
Even because I saw your Facebook post. You did a Facebook post on the day. They said they were going to do it on a certain date, and on that date you said
you did a Facebook post. Sent us all an email at the start of June saying the invoices are coming out, or the end of June, the invoices are coming out on the 18th of July. Apparently nobody read that email, because people from the 1st of July were panicking and saying, where is my invoice? Why isn't it here? But on the 18th of July, the day it was due to come out, I did a big Facebook post saying, guys, today's the day. Start looking out for it. If you don't have it by next week, like, ring them and find out. And yeah, there were a few panicky people on there who thanked me for reminding them. There were a few panicky people who did not thank me and who just railed against the injustice of the entire system. And I tried to move their railing at the injustice to somewhere that might actually be useful, because I can't do anything about it.
No.
But I
saw your post and I checked my email straight away and it wasn't there. And I'm like, oh God, now I'm in this limbo state.
But I did say in that post,
you did,
you know, like, it's going to come at some time.
Totally.
And you don't have to worry about it until like next Monday. Like, if you don't have it by Monday, then you could start worrying. But before then, like, it's all good, because these things take time.
So anyway, pay your invoice. That's all we're saying. Just
pay your invoice. Sarah,
what else is happening in the world? Actually, and we haven't prepped this, but by the end of this podcast, I just want to do a bit of a tease of what we're launching Celebrant Institute-wide soon, and we've also got a conference coming up. But before those things, there was a list that you said to me before, which I didn't write down, and I've now forgotten.
No, it's fine. So the first thing on – well, the registration fee was the first thing on my list, but the next thing on my list is about the new fact sheet that came out in the last week of June, which is about celebrant obligations in an online environment. Some of our regular long-term listeners may recall that this is all down to Josh fighting the good fight. Basically, it's about MLCS has looked at the Marriage Act in the context of the Electronic Transactions Act, and what do those two acts working together allow us to do? And basically, the reason they've done that is because Josh argued the toss that we should be able to do certain things online rather than in person. So basically, the upshot is we can now receive signed and witness NOIMs electronically and never receive the hard copy original.
What a time to be alive.
I know. Amazing. So this is going to be a big deal for people who are getting married interstate and who email their NOIM to their celebrant, you know, ahead of the 1 month to meet the lodgement, and then forget to bring it with them to the wedding, which has been a problem that's happened on many occasions, and the celebrant has not been able to marry that person or that couple because they hadn't had the hard copy.
I've had to turn a couple away. It was an elopement in Perth. And they lived hours away, and they knew, and they accepted their fate because they were aware of the whole situation. Like, if I ever had to do that, I would like on multiple occasions, I would communicate, hey, guys, don't forget your passports.
Oh, but, these celebrants do and they still forget it.
Totally, because because they're
people
human.
Are stupid. Yeah.
And so
human and stupid.
We're rescued for that.
So we can accept the NOIM electronically, which is also really good for transferring it if a celebrant gets sick or has an accident. It means that the celebrant can take a photo of the NOIM and text it to the new celebrant.
Yes,
which is amazing. Like, that's really cool. For evidence of date and place of birth, so birth certificate or passport, they can take a scan or a photo of the original document and email it or text it to the celebrant, and that is sufficient. We don't need to see the hard copy. Now, for evidence of identity, obviously you need to see photo ID with the person. So it's no good them just emailing it to you if you've never met them, because how do you know that that belongs to them? So you can either still see the evidence of identity in person with them, or you could get them to email it and then remember to bring up the file when you meet with them so that you can compare it to what they look like, or you can look at it over Skype or FaceTime. As long as they hold it up to the camera next to their face and you can see that that's who they are, and then you can compare the written details on that form of ID with their birth certificate or passport and you're good to go. So this is really a massive step forward. It's pretty much going to change a lot of people's lives, and it's really cool, but a lot of people seem to have missed it because it was kind of buried down the bottom of the email about the fee, so at the end of June. So a lot of people have missed it. So if you missed it, it's on the AGD website under Celebrant Resources and Fact Sheets, and it's called something like Celebrant Obligations in an Online Environment. It's really cool. Have a read of it. There's a fact sheet and a quick reference guide, and it's super ace.
My favorite thing about them issuing a fact sheet is because when they emailed me confirmation of this, February, March, April, something like that.
Yeah.
They emailed confirmation and I believe they might have said in the Marriage Celebrant Matters that they would be issuing a fact sheet later in the year. Was that the communication?
Yep.
And so it was never in doubt that this was the case. And even before they issued their opinion, the law preceded them. Like, the law hasn't changed. It's just their interpretation of the law has changed.
Yes, correct.
And so if you were a bold enough celebrant, like myself, for example, you may well have been operating in that way before said fact sheet was released.
Yes.
Because the law is the law. It just was. And so an interpretation of it certainly helps. And so everything that's happened is good. But there were people, even on our Facebook page, just didn't believe me. And I'll wait to see what the marriage celebrant section says. And
go right ahead.
Yeah. It was actually a beautiful occasion when this came out. It's like, thank God. There was just some, I don't know. I know that a lot of celebrants have been doing this for a long time. And a lot of people like to make it hard for themselves. And it just shouldn't be hard. Like, there's boundaries and there's limits and there's expectations and there's legal hoops we've got to jump through, 100%. But let's not make this any harder than it has to be.
Totally. Totally. And I also I had a thought, but it's...
Were you lying? It sounds like you were lying.
Damn it. It was a really good thought too, and then I got confused.
Well, you can come back to it in a second, because I'm going to be leading a topic on this at our Celebrant Institute conference, which is like a number of days away, maybe
10.
Something.
Yeah.
But working in the iPad side of things, signing electronically, like just kind of how Josh Withers does electronic stuff.
That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that the Electronic Transaction Act was written in 1999. So, like, all of these things have actually been possible for 20 years. This is not new. This is not a new piece of legislation. It's just that nobody ever bothered to question it before and say, hey, why can't we do these things electronically until you've fought the good fight? There's quite a few things like that that are really old-fashioned. Like, so, for example, some of you will have seen I wrote an article about commissioners for declarations.
Yeah.
On the notice of intended marriage, one of the authorised witnesses to the signatures is commissioner for declarations under the Statutory Declarations Act 1959. So I've had quite a few people asking me, like, what is that? And I did some research and I couldn't – there is – the words commissioner and declarations do not appear in the Stat Dec Act 1959. So I emailed, and I know there were state-based comdecs, but they're not under the federal Stat Dec Act. So I emailed MLCS and they came back and went, oh, yeah, they were removed from the Stat Dec Act in like 2012, and it is unclear whether state-appointed comdecs are authorised to witness signatures on NOIMS.
It's a weird little situation.
It is unclear. Why has nobody looked at this before?
Do we actually know, like, what slash who a commissioner for declarations is and what do they do? Like
it's
who is
different,
that?
It's different in every state. They don't exist, as far as I can find, in anywhere from Tasmania, except for Tasmania and Queensland. In Tasmania, they are people who can witness state stat decks. And so in Tasmania, there's a whole bunch of qualifications, like pharmacists and so forth, that are com decks just because they are that qualification. In Brisbane, I think, or in Queensland, I think that you apply to be a com deck the way you apply to be a justice of the peace. But as far as I can find, they don't exist in any other state. So, and they haven't existed in federal legislation for almost 10 years.
Slowly and surely, we're just working our way through all the weird marriage stuff.
And then, here's another one. So, we all know that I'm a nerd, and last week I was looking at the marriage statistics from last year. Don't ask. And I was looking at the explanatory notes. Now, you know that disastrous question on the NOIM that we all hate about children of previous marriages?
Yeah.
There is a note that says, the Australian Bureau of Statistics has not reported on children of previous marriages since 2005.
Yet it still exists on the notice of intent.
Yet it still is on the form.
And it went through the form review of
2014.
12, yeah, 15, yeah. Wow.
What? Like what? Why? That's ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. So just on the forms, we may not have them even by January next year now. So they've been doing this current review of the forms since January 2015. We thought in 2017, we thought they had, you know, a draft and we thought that they were waiting for marriage equality and that they would just make all the changes at once. Then marriage equality came and that didn't happen. So then last year in September, some of you will remember, they released a version of the NOIM that had practically no information on it, like no address, no occupation, no parents' names, no nothing. And they released that for consultation for a month, and I wrote an article on that at the time. And then at the meeting with associations in May this year, when we were expecting, they were going to say, okay, we've finished that review now and the forms are going to be released for the 1st of July. They said, oh, we still haven't heard from the Bureau of Statistics about whether or not they're happy with them. So we're hoping for the 1st of January and then the OPD compulsory next year will be about how to use the new forms, which is literally going to take 10 minutes because it'll be pretty much be fill in your name and your date of birth and that's about it. Then at the AFCC conference at the start of the week, she said, well, we've kind of realised that the Marriage Act doesn't actually require us to collect very much information, which is why we stripped it all out of the NOIM last year. But now we're wondering if the registries of births, deaths and marriages are kind of required to report on certain information or collect certain information when they register the marriage. So now we've gone back to the BDMs to ask them to look up like the case law from before 1961 when marriage was federated to see like what they're supposed to be collecting. So now we're kind of thinking that maybe we won't have them for the 1st of January. They might not be out until like July next year. And then we don't really know what the compulsory is going to be about.
What a time to be alive, Sarah.
Like I don't even, I don't even know, like, who to lobby about this, because I feel like it's such an administrative thing that, like, if I went to my federal member with it, they'd go, don't even worry about it. Just continue on with the old form, even though it's old-fashioned and stupid, and ask lots of information that we don't need and that nobody needs to know. Don't worry about it. It's not important. But they've been doing this for nearly 5 years. I don't understand. It hurts my head a lot.
How's the head going? You feeling good? You want to take five?
Actually, that's just reminded me of something. In the last episode that we recorded at the end of May, I was a bit riled up, and we actually called the episode Sarah is a bit riled up. And I'd like to just give a shout out to the three or four people who sent me messages after they'd listened to the episode to go, hey, are you okay? Because you were really riled up and you're not usually like that. And so we just need to check that you're all right. So thanks, guys. I totally am okay. I just got a bit annoyed about some of the things that we talked about in the last episode, but thanks for checking in. I really appreciate it.
Good people exist. They walk
super nice. Yeah. Okay. Do we need to talk any more about online environment?
No. If you...
Yeah, you're going to talk about iPad, like signing on the iPad at the conference, and we're going to record that session, I believe, is the plan.
Yeah, we're going to give it a shot, see if we can record it.
So that we can make it like an online tutorial type thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the people who are coming to the conference will be able to have some hands-on, like, playing with it and see how it feels to sign with the pen, with the Apple Pencil and blah, 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 and see how that all goes. So that's cool.
It's always such a beautiful experience when couples and witnesses particularly, because couples have usually signed annoying with me on the Apple Pencil, so they've had the experience. But witnesses go, oh, it's nothing like Australia Post. Because that's the only experience they've had prior to
signing on a screen.
Yeah.
Yep. That's hilarious. I've actually never used an Apple Pencil. I don't know how it feels. I look forward to discovering that.
Well, let me tell you, Sarah, you should come to the Celebrant Institute conference. It's on about 10 days.
It's going to be good. I'm definitely going to be there. Yep.
Actually, you know what? On that note, are we in a place where we can talk about conference for a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, let's just talk freely. When we launched the Celebrant Institute conference, we were doing it on the back of kind of two things. One, we were given an opportunity to partner up with the DJAA, the DJ Association of Australia, and the
Alliance of Australia.
Oh, something. The DJAA. It is. It's the Alliance. I love that you know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You know that I know things.
You do know things. That's why I keep you around. So so we were given an opportunity to partner with them. And I'd spoken at their conference before, and their friend, the guys involved, they're friends. I like them. And we talked about possibly running something in conjunction with them, maybe having a day together and then a day separate. And it, like, honestly, I thought it was a pretty good idea, just between you and me. I thought it was a stellar idea. And so we had the opportunity, and Sarah and I were obviously – we do this podcast, we do the website, celebrant.institute. Sarah's obviously a keen and an able and an excellent trainer, and I've got an opinion on things, and thought, this is great. We'll just launch a conference. And at the time we launched it, there's friends of ours that run a conference, and I'm going to plead ignorance here. I just didn't know there was one on. I didn't know that the Celebrant Society guys had one on. Like, I knew that there'd been one. I'd never been able to go because it's always in other cities, and I was going to be in other cities when it happened. And, you know, my schedule's a hard thing. Like, I'm barely able to make an hour in my garage to talk to Sarah, let alone to see my child, let alone to attend the conferences. And so I knew that the association conferences were on, but I was of the opinion that anyone who was in our circle didn't go to those circles. So I thought maybe there's an opportunity there. And so we put this on, and I'm going to be honest, it hasn't really gone how we hoped. We were a little bit iffy as to whether conferences were kind of a thing we wanted to do anyway, but we thought we'll just do this, and it's a fairly low risk thing. It's actually, I'm happy to say that there's been no great risk or stress or outlay for Sarah and I. We've both purchased tickets because we're essentially kind of attending a conference. Well, we are.
We are
attending a conference. Because everyone at the DJ, like everyone that's involved, purchases a ticket. There's no you know, leaders get in free. But that's the only outlay to us. There's been no great risk to us. Like, if so-and-so people don't come, we're not out of pocket. And I guess that's why the Celebrant Institute conference / the DJAA conference has been priced so much, is because, we don't want to go broke if no one comes. And so it's been priced high. And you know what? It's had the desired effect. They're not broke, but also there isn't great attendance. And as of what I currently know, there's going to be about seven or eight of us in the room for the Celebrant Institute conference, which will be a fine and dandy little effort. But to be completely honest, like, I was kind of expecting a few more. Like, I'm not disappointed.
Hoping.
I thought we could get 20, 30 in a row, and so we haven't, and it's cool. And the people that are coming are actually super keen and pumped, and so their excitement is kind of really driving me to do something that's going to be – we were going to do something great anyway, but, you know, like, just to speak freely, yeah, I was a bit down when I found out. I was expecting a lot more and hoping for a lot more. But we're going to make a lot of the conference available on the Celebrant Institute website. But also, there's still time. If you're listening to this thing, I'm doing nothing August 6 and 7 on the Gold Coast. And, hey, please, there's room. There's seats available. But I know a lot of people said, oh, we'll come to the next one. And I at this current stage, Sarah and I don't have any plans for future events. I never want to say never, but we don't really have any great plans to have future events in the future. Would you... Is that where your heart's at?
Yeah, I think so. I had a discussion with I spoke to some of my Celebrant friends yesterday, and they said, oh, how's the Institute going? And I said, the Institute is going really well for our core business, which is answering people's questions.
Yeah.
And producing our podcast. That is our core business. You know, being there to help out our fellow celebrants, providing a service that nobody else is providing that I'm aware of. So for our core business, we're doing amazing. For our non-core business of trying to run a conference, not so much. And that's probably not an experiment that I wish to try and repeat. Basically because in my pre-celebrant life, I ran a lot of conferences. They're bloody hard work. There are a lot of time and effort and a lot of capacity, which I just don't have, and Josh doesn't really have either. So I think that, and I think that kind of shows in how many people are coming along. And I think that some people have said to me they got a bit confused about the partnership with the DJs and how that worked. And so I don't know. Anyway, which is fine, but it's when we started the Celebrant Institute, running conferences was not part of the core. This is what we're going to do.
No, it wasn't.
It came out as another opportunity that we went, hey, let's give it a shot and see what happens. But there are other people who run conferences, and I'm super happy to keep doing things that other people aren't doing. I like to fill a gap in the market, you know, and I think that's really cool that we do that.
Yeah, in no way did I want to come out in competition with the Celebrant Society.
Or with any of the other associations or anything like that.
Yeah. Like, because we weren't offering museum kind of, you know, trips after dinner, after tea and scones.
No,
it wasn't what we were doing. They can do that.
No. Yes, if they want.
So the Celebrant Institute Conference, it's going to be great. We're going to record it. It's going to be cool. And hopefully in the future, like, I'd like to – we talked about it a little bit, but I'd like to see our OPDs have a little bit more of it. Like, it'd be cool. It'd be just cool to see our members kind of go to Sarah's OPD. And it might be that – I don't know. We're just kind of freeballing here. But maybe there's – like, if I'm going to be in Melbourne at a time Sarah's doing an OPD, it'd be cool to come along and do, like, a dinner afterwards or something. I don't know.
Sure.
Like, it's good to get together. You and I had our thing where we had beers in Shugan, which was super convenient for me. It's just a nice little stroll from my house, but it'd be like that was fun. It was, everyone came in, we had a beer, we talked smack, and we went home, and it was a good night, and that kind of stuff was fun. But the podcast is what we do really well. We answering people's questions, writing articles, I think we do that really well, and people really love that. And we haven't really talked about announcing it, but hey, I'm going to say it.
Let's do it.
We're going to start offering the Certificate of Foreign Celebrancy any day now. So that's a thing that we're going to do really, really well. Sarah's honestly, it's funny, as I say this, I'm pointing at your Skype window on my computer. In case no one knows who Sarah is, she's the girl that I'm pointing at in the avatar. She's a spectacular trainer. And the reason we're launching into that is because, yes, there's other people that do the Cert 4, but there hasn't been until now. There hasn't been a search for provider who I would unconditionally say, yeah, like to a friend wanting to become a celebrant, I said, listen, go with XYZ. They are the best. There's plenty of fine people. But as far as like my, like the Josh Withers view of how a celebrant should run and operate and learn and be, that hasn't existed. And I'm glad to say that it will do with the Celebrant Institute doing the search for. Sarah's going to be leading it. It's going to be spectacular. Sarah, you're great. Go for it.
So I just want to clarify that this does not mean that the Celebrant Institute is becoming an RTO, because we're not, because that's bloody hard and costs a lot of money and we're not doing it. So what we are doing is the RTO that I already work for, Talented Training, has allowed us to essentially rebrand the Cert 4. So instead of it being run by Talented Training, the name of which means nothing to anyone, we're going to bring it under the Celebrant Institute umbrella, so that it we really are now able to offer a full service for aspiring celebrants right through to practicing celebrants, which is super cool. So it means that the Celebrant Institute Certificate 4 in celebrancy is under the auspice of our training partner, Talented Training. That's kind of the official language. Talented Training will issue the certificates, the statements of attainment, like that'll have all Talented Training all over it. But in terms of, you know, the people who come along and learn the certificate for from me, you'll be sitting under the Celebrant Institute umbrella. All of the students who sign up to do the cert for with the Celebrant Institute will get a membership. We've got some mentoring plans. Depending on which package you choose, you'll get some time with me during your training and some time with Josh after your training. There's lots of resources and all that kind of stuff that's available. So it's super cool. I'm really excited that we can kind of bring it under this umbrella of this cool thing that we've already created and just extend our offering. So I know that we already have a lot of members and a lot of listeners to the podcast who are aspiring celebrants who are studying often with other RTOs, and they come to us for help, which is really nice of them.
Can you expand on that for a second? A shitload of people are with other RTOs, but they rightfully and are welcome to use their Celebrant Institute membership to come alongside their existing cert for trainer who isn't bringing the goods. And that's okay. But honestly, like, I would hope that if someone was offering a cert for and something, that they could provide the full gamut of support needed, which is part of the reason we're doing this, is because like that's kind of the idea, is that if you're doing the cert for with us, there's no question too hairy, there's no legal like marriage legal quandary, not just all legal quandary. If you've killed a guy, don't come to us.
No. Unless you killed someone while you were marrying him.
Yeah, then, wow, look at that quandary.
Woo!
Stay tuned, people. We'll figure out what to do with that and get back to you soon. But yeah, like the, of course, marriage legals, like the, and if we don't know, we'll honestly say, I don't know, but I can tell you that within an hour afterwards, Sarah will have figured it out, because she's, they don't call her the oracle for nothing.
And also I'm a bit like a dog with a bone who, once somebody's asked me a question, I bloody go and find out the answer.
Yeah. But then also on top of that, that not only would you walk out of the cert for with us completely competent at your legal obligations and the legal process of marrying someone, but also, gosh, you would just be so well equipped to run a great business.
Yeah, totally, which is really important, because I know that a lot of people walk out of their cert for and go, okay, well, I know how to be a celebrant, but I don't know anything about invoicing or like getting paid or contracts or running a business. So we cover all of that. The one thing I do want to say, though, is just to be clear, anybody with a Celebrant Institute membership, regardless of what stage in their career or pre-career they're at, is welcome to ask me a question.
Oh, yeah, yes.
But I am not going to answer questions that are part of your application to become a celebrant.
Have people done that?
Yes.
No.
And I'm also not going to like, if you're being assessed by me and you ring up, you know, you're welcome to ring me up and go, I'm really struggling with this question, and I will help you talk around that and help you find where to find the answer. I'm not going to give you the answer because that kind of defeats the purpose of being assessed. So I just wanted to, like, clarify that I'm very happy to help, but in some circumstances I might say, can't actually answer that. Why don't you have a look at this page of the guidelines?
And the guidelines are actually quite helpful. Like, I've something
they're
really
super helpful.
Something really, I don't know if we have really, I don't know how long we've been recording for.
But 54 minutes and
there we go. So
55 minutes.
We can probably cover it briefly while the plane flies over. And I'm 2 weeks into having hired an assistant. And I've got someone helping me, and as the first step of her working with me, I said, here's the link to the guidelines, download those babies, have a solid read. And obviously the guidelines do not make for a certificate for, but she, thank God she's intelligent enough that she's just kind of figured that most of her questions will be in the guidelines. And there's been two or three things where she's, you know, sent me a message and said, what about this? And of course, like, she's never done celebrancy before, and she's not even becoming a celebrant. She's just helping me. And she has gotten married. She's one of my former brides. But yeah, the guidelines, like, I was actually kind of proud that the guidelines held up for her.
Yeah, totally. And they do. And just before we get a series of outraged emails saying Josh is outsourcing his legal responsibilities, I have no doubt that you are double-checking everything that she does
1,000%
before you actually use it in a marriage ceremony. 1,000%. So I just wanted to clarify that because I could already hear the comments in my head.
I'm glad you're smart enough to see that, because I'm usually not smart enough to see that. And then it comes in a week later, I'm like, it comes in and I was like, fuck.
I forgot to think about that potential outcome. That's really, and that is really good. And for the purposes of what she's doing, your assistant, which is essentially filling in NOIMS and filling in paperwork for you to check before people sign it, yes, the guidelines pretty much will answer the majority of her questions, the vast majority.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you that my least favorite thing in my celebrant practice is when people send me their info for the NOIM and then just type it into the different BDMs. I don't know why, because it's actually not that hard. Like, there's been a few times when I've been under the pump, but I've had to do it in, like, 5 minutes because I've got to be at a meeting.
It takes me 6 minutes to type the NOIM information into Victoria BDM.
Yeah, and Victoria's one of the worst. And Queensland's actually a really beautiful system. So Queensland, I think I've probably done it in, like, 3 or 4 minutes. It's not that hard.
No.
But it's something that creates a real mental roadblock for me.
Oh, dear. Yeah. That's not ideal.
So, yeah. It's good. Life's good.
Life's good. When are we going to – so in terms of when we're bringing this Cert 4 under the Celebrant Institute banner, it's pretty much going to be when we've just ironed out the little technical bugs, because we're doing, like, fancy pants online enrollment forms and things like that are hard.
So they are hard.
It'll be very soon though, very soon, and it's super exciting.
Oh, and we'll probably launch it when we launch our new branding as well, because we've got
new logo
being designed, new branding and colours,
yeah,
and we've got we've got Instagram story templates and
love it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So yeah, that'll all be happening. I'd forecast in the next fortnight. The week leading up to the conference, I'm in New Zealand. I'm in Queenstown for
that's next week.
Yeah, this week coming. So
yeah,
bunch of weddings over there, and I'm sure we'll make it happen in the next 7 to 14 days. I reckon.
I don't think we should put a number of days on this.
Oh, no. I like some pressure.
Sure.
But
you're in Queenstown next week, and then the week after that is our conference week. And so, I mean, I suppose I'm going to be in Queensland, so that is a handy time for us to sit down and finish nutting it out.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay, maybe we can put 7 to 14 days on it.
And I don't know if
maybe more like 14 days.
Like, we've blown right past that July 1 deadline we set for ourselves. Yes.
But we didn't tell anyone that.
No, that's true.
We didn't go public with that deadline.
Is this on? Oh God, what have we done?
Oh, I love it. That was all that I had. Oh no, I did have one more thing on my list to talk about today.
Yeah.
And that was the incredible Silver Celebrant funeral training that I attended in June.
Yeah. Throw it out there because we wanted a review. Give us the review.
Yeah. So Robin O'Connell is a funeral celebrant in Melbourne. She's been a funeral celebrant for over 17 years and she has performed over 2,000 funerals. So she pretty much knows what she's talking about. And she had a grief counselling background before that, so she also knew what she was talking about with that, which was super cool. So she's been running this course for years, since 2011, I think, and I kind of always wanted to do it, but, you know, it's 6 days. You stay in the Dandenongs at this gorgeous kind of conference centre and... like, it's a big investment of time and money and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I eventually put my foot down this year and said, I'm going to go do it. And so by the time I went along to the course, I'd done 90 funerals. I did the 90th on the day that the course started, the morning the course started. But even having done 90 funerals, I took so much out of that 6 days. I can't even tell you. It opened my eyes to different ways of structuring funeral ceremonies that I hadn't thought of because it wasn't how I was taught. Different ideas to go into the ceremony and, like, lots and lots of little tips and tricks. Like, you know, one of the things she said to us was always read the newspaper death notice if they put a death notice in the paper because it will tell you a lot. If they say, beloved mother, you'll know they probably liked her. If they just said mother, that gives you a clue that maybe there's some tension there. If they say something like now with the angels, you'll know that there's possibly a religious bent or a spiritual bent, and you can potentially use that in the ceremony when you're considering readings and so forth. It might give you maiden name, which you can then use to, you know, Google them and see if they're on a nominal roll from a war. It might give you the names of all their family members, so you can go in already having all of those written down, and you're not starting from scratch. That's massive, just from the stuff that you can pull out of a death notice. It never even occurred to me to read the death notice before, and to think about what the words in the death notice might mean. So I've found that super, super helpful. So I've done 4 funerals since the course and I've got 3 next week. And I had one this week where it was for an elderly woman, but her children really, she was difficult. She was very difficult. She'd broken their dad's heart and she had cancer for a long time and was not a good patient. And they knew that they were loved, but they didn't come first in her life. So I looked at the death notice and it just said, mother of blah, grandmother of blah, social butterfly. That was it. The word love didn't appear in there. No beloved, no we'll miss you, no thinking, nothing, just the facts. So that told me a lot before I walked into the meeting, and that was really useful to get that information. So it was fantastic from the point of view of getting lots of new tips and tricks. It was also really great from the point of view of getting validation about what I already do, because we had to a mock family meeting on the Sunday night. We had to write a ceremony and perform it on the Wednesday morning. So this is the reason that Robin does this in such an intensive way rather than doing like one weekend for 6 weeks or whatever, because she's trying to mirror what would happen in real life. Like in real life, you meet with a family on a Sunday and the wedding and the funeral's on Wednesday or Thursday. You can't understand what that pressure feels like if you don't go through that kind of experience. So we did that and she made very, very minimal edits to my script. Things like changing but to however. So not really anything that was too significant. And then I got my review from her last week of the funeral of the performance that I did, in which she basically said, that was amazing. And I could only think of like the most picky little things, you know, maybe you could slow down a bit and a bit more pauses and maybe don't use people's dates of birth because they don't want people to know how old they were. But other than that, she's like, it was amazing. So to get validation from an expert who I really admire about that what I'm already that what I was already doing, along with the stuff that I added in that I'd picked up over that week, that was really valuable for me. And I've said on this podcast before that it's just as valuable to get validation about what you're already doing as it is to learn new things. So if anybody is considering becoming a funeral celebrant, if you want to work in that space, you know, full time or a lot, I really encourage you to consider this course, silvercelebrants.com.au. Robin O'Connell is the trainer. It is an investment, but it's worth every penny and every second. And also, the food is home cooked and amazing.
Hang on, she has home cooked food for the whole thing as well?
3 meals a day plus morning and afternoon tea.
Well, like, does she wash your feet at the end of it?
Robin doesn't cook the food. There's people like running the conference center who cook the food, and it's amazing. Gosh. It's delicious. It was really great. So it was really, really great, and I wanted to give a big shout out and just say if anybody's considering funeral celebrancy, I really encourage you to consider this course. It is the only course that I will recommend. The funeral training that I provide in my Cert 4 is really only enough to provide a base for marriage celebrants who get asked to do a funeral. It's not really a sufficient deep dive for people who really want to make funerals their main kind of source of income. So if that's you, definitely consider doing. And the other 3 people who were there that week had all flown in for interstate, so which is really good. And the message is out there and people are knowing that she's amazing.
Can I tell you that, like, I know we've just kind of said in a few minutes earlier that we're not planning other events, but if we were going to do events, I'd like, and I know you and I even talked about this, about how it's a lot of work, but I would love to do that kind of like get an Airbnb for the week and actually bunk in with like 5-10 celebrants and like celebrants and kind of like it'd be all intensive. And I think you might have said that like as a host, you would find that really overwhelming. And I value that, but I just think it'd be cool.
It would be cool. It would be cool.
Yeah.
Celebrant camp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine? It'd be messy. Anyway, I think that's all I've got on my list. Have you got anything else on your list?
Sarah, my list is a never-ending avalanche of personal life and father life and wedding and elopement life and travel. So, but as far as this podcast goes, I feel like we have covered some good bases. We might have even gone so far as to make some hashtag good content.
Woohoo! That's what I like to hear.
So in case you've gotten this far and you have no idea who we are, I'm Josh Withers. That's Sarah Aird. We make the Celebrant Institute. The website is celebrant.institute. If you're listening to this episode, you've just kind of stumbled across it and you're like, I want to listen to more episodes, then hopefully your podcast app has some helpers to kind of, you know, force you down the rabbit hole. But celebrant.fm lists all of our episodes. You can subscribe, find the links for your thing there. And can I just say, I know a few people kind of click the link on Facebook and they listen on their web browser, which is fine. Like, welcome. You're welcome to listen however and wherever you like. But there's cool apps in your phone. Like, your phone probably already has a pre-installed podcast app. If it doesn't, I love Overcast. Do you use Apple Podcasts, Sarah?
No, I use Overcast as well. You're on in. Your recommendation, and I love it. Mate, I've been in for like 18 months. I love Overcast. It's awesome.
I just forget who I've told to go to Overcast. Like, my closest mate, yeah. Scotty, he refuses. He's adamant. He's like, my recommendation is a bad recommendation. And so,
he's refusing just on the basis of where the recommendation came from.
That's what friends are for. That's awesome. That's why you get married and have friends.
Yay, Scotty.
So yeah, so if you're the person that clicks the link on Facebook and listens there, cool. Like, thank you. I feel so valued that you would do that. But let me tell you, there's a slightly easier way. Get on your phone, get your phone hooked up to Bluetooth, get on your AirPods, whatever it is, and enjoy the Celebrant Talk Show. Thank you, everyone. Have a spectacular week, and we'll talk to you sometime in the next 1 to 48 weeks.
Talk soon. Thanks, everyone. Talk soon. See you later.